Hey, welcome back to Deeper Than Dough. I'm really excited about today's episode because Greg Majewski isn't just a powerhouse in the food industry, but someone that I've had the pleasure of working with and learning from over the past 2 years, first as an advisor and then as CEO of Dirty Dough. Greg is also the CEO of Craveworthy Brands, and he's sharing his insights about building a franchise model that's truly focused on franchisee success. We talk about his journey from Jimmy John's to Craveworthy, the power of co-branding, and how innovative marketing strategies are driving brand growth with Craveworthy Brands. If you've ever wondered about franchising as a path to generational wealth, this episode is for you. And hey, if you're enjoying the podcast, please don't forget to like, subscribe, and share it with a friend. So Greg, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bennett. It's sort of weird having you and me on a show together, now officially one team, which is pretty awesome.
Yes. Well, I was scheduled to be on the Room for Seconds podcast, and I got nervous. I do 3 podcasts a day. I'm like, oh shit, Greg's going to interview me? Do I have to prep? It is a different
thing. I know feel, all so. The dirty secrets, so I can ask the right information.
Yep.
Like, what happened to the hair?
You knew me back before I had hair. So we go back. Let's start with Craveworthy Brands, just the history of Craveworthy and why it differentiates itself or how it differentiates itself from any other food franchise concept or platform.
So the idea behind Craveworthy came to me as I've been in the industry for 27 years now. I started at a company everyone knows as Jimmy John's. I joined that company when there was 24 restaurants, became CEO when we had 30, and built the company to over 300 and 700 sold by the time I left. And during my time there and then during other ventures and other restaurants that I opened afterwards, I've consulted for every major restaurant company in America. I have, you know, helped build other restaurant companies to not as big as Jimmy John's, but significant. And I realized that these emerging brands or these legacy brands needed a concept or a parent to sort of help them not make the mistakes of past restaurant operators. And every startup I saw in the franchising space continued to make mistake after mistake and stunted their growth and hurt their franchisees. And I wanted to create a company that allowed us to not have the franchisees suffer through the company's learning curves and get them off on a quicker footprint so they could achieve their American dream, whatever that dream may be.
Awesome. I love it. And I experienced it of the kind of going into the pros and cons of a small brand versus a big brand. A big brand like a Jimmy John's, Subway, Wing It On, whatever. They're great. They have money. They have backing. They have experience. But what they don't have is territory. And what they don't have is a personal relationship, right? You get plugged in the system, you're another number. If you go with a small brand, you meet the founder, you get the handholding, they're with you at the grand opening. It feels amazing, but you're like, do these guys know what they're doing? They only have 5 locations open up, right? But they do have the wide open territory. So huge need for that in the market. And something that focusing on the Jimmy John's, you were there from 30 to 300. And I think anybody in the industry is going to agree that that's the hard lift, right? That's the foundation. And Jimmy John's has been the most successful food franchise in the last 3 decades based on percentage growth. So what was it that you guys did at Jimmy John's and what are some of the reasons that fueled the most successful food franchise in the last 30 years?
I mean, it was right place, right time, but believing in making our franchisees believe in the culture that we wanted to have and operating under one system. We didn't deviate from that system day in and day out. We made the system better every day. And we made sure that our franchisees were winning each and every step of the way. And we did that by being operators first and foremost with them and battling in the trenches with them, but also not making a decision from an ivory tower and just expecting everyone to buy into it and that they were going to do it because, oh, the big bad franchisor said you had to jump it. And so how high was you going to jump wasn't the question. It was, how are we going to get this as a team? And how are we going to grow at a speed that was unheard of? And it truly was because we had a culture built because we followed a system and we all believed. And that's the exact same process that we're putting into place here. We're taking everything that I learned from my Jimmy John's days and actually tweaking it to make it even better and building that same culture and same passion around all of our brands because it's the exact same system over and over again that we put in place to allow our franchisees to be successful. And nothing that we do, we don't feel ourselves, just like back then. If I change a product, I know what it's going to do to my bottom line because I own more stores than most. And I am a franchisee at the same time as I'm a franchisor of the brands that I own. And that's important to me to understand what everybody goes through. And that allows us to sort of help and better the franchise system day in and day out.
Super unique. I haven't heard anybody that has, I mean, every time they pick up a brand, they want to be the franchisee. Why do you want to be a franchisee? You already own the whole damn company. Now, you just explained a little bit why. How many franchises and across how many concepts, not exact numbers, but just rough on the franchisee side?
So, I mean, today I'm still a partner in over 600 restaurants in different groups across the country. I am, you know, I'm just starting to build out my franchise network of our own brands. We've signed our first location to open up, actually our second. We have a Genghis in Columbus, Ohio that I own. We'll open up a Genghis in Detroit, a Wing It On in Detroit. And we are doing a Budlong in Rockford. Those would be the first set that will all be mine personally outside of the investment and the time that I spend in. And the reason why we do that again is I believe in what I'm doing and I believe in the concepts that we have. And so why wouldn't I want to be, have that as part of my events, investment portfolio going down the line on top of just the brands? Everyone thinks the franchisee is the one that makes all the money. And what everyone forgets is that no, the store owners make all the cash. You know, the franchisees may make a small portion of what you bring in, but they give you the tools to be successful. I want to hit the home run just like my franchisees do.
Yes. Franchisors, I think is what you meant to say. Everybody thinks franchisors makes all the money. And you're like, no, the franchisees are, check my bank account. We do audited financials.
Like, the franchise, yes.
Check the bank account so as we're growing. So I always do straight commission on everything because it's like, if I can do it, then it's a win-win. And I'm looking at this the same way. Like if I'm the operator and the franchisor and the franchisee, like if I'm putting my own money into the exact same system you're buying into, shows a lot of faith on there. One thing that's very unique about Craveworthy, or I should say two things, is the opportunity to expand into multiple brands selling multiple products, potentially out of a single lease. So there's two options there. There's co-branding. I want to own a Genghis Grill and a Wing It On side by side. Can I do that? Can I share my freezers, my build out cost, some labor, is the point of sale system the same? And then ghost kitchens, as far as now I already have the equipment, is there any way to then utilize the equipment labor to sell other brands on a third party platform?
So we definitely allow co-branding, not exactly as you spelled it out, but we do allow you to take a 3,000 square foot space and build two 1,500 square foot restaurants and use shared kitchen prep area and stuff like that. But when your consumer walks in, they don't realize that they're walking into the same restaurant and that everything is being done by the same team in the back of the house and producing the food. That's still the separation because you want them to have that custom experience for what those brands are. But it's a great way to go in and take great spaces and allow yourself the dynamics of making a ton of revenue on a much cheaper rent, because finding a 1500 square foot space has always been hard. So now you could take a 24 or 2500 square foot space, for example, put 1500 for a Wing It On and take 1000 square feet for a Dirty Dough or a Kinnaman's when we're ready to franchise in a couple months, and have those additional revenues and save yourself a ton of TI because you're building one infrastructure base. The other thing that Craveworthy does that's so unique and so different, though, is that we are all in on virtual brands, and we created Craveworthy Kitchen. And what Craveworthy Kitchen allows you to do is really remarkable, because every one of our brands will have three virtual brands that operate out of your back door, and your consumers will be able to order when they come into the restaurant. And so when they go online and they order from, let's say you did a Tsum Tsum, you go to tsumtsum.com and you go and place your order. You also see other Craveworthy Kitchen brands that are available at that location to help drive incremental revenue. And this phenomenon, when we tested it and put it into our stores, are generating anywhere between $250,000 and $750,000 in additional revenue day in and day out. We have a couple of stores that have now reached over $1 million in incremental revenue through that process. And that's just a unique way to add more revenue to those brick and mortar brands that you bring in. The other plus is same franchise fee. You get that as part of your franchise fee when you buy the brand. And so it's the same royalty, same advertising fee. Nothing else changes for you as a franchisee. You don't pay anything additional for that. It's just part of your normal economic system of your restaurant.
Which speaks to simplicity. I mean, everything was simple. As soon as Dirty Dough became a Craveworthy brand, our royalties, marketing, tech, franchise fees, it all matches everything else. So it's super simple. $35,000, very fair, reasonable franchise fee for any of the brands. And then to add these additional revenue streams, it doesn't cost any more money. We're just, they're ordering different products through Sysco using their same ovens, fryers, to then now offer potentially scrambled eggs, a breakfast product when their store is usually slow and their, you know, employees are just checking their phone.
Yeah. I mean, and you can look at examples in the industry that has made this model work, and Doghouse is the best example out there. Their badass burrito concept averages $1 million in AUVs in this virtual brand that operates out of the backdoor kitchen. Imagine being able to add incremental revenue and paying for your G&A and everything else from a brand that's not even the one that your customers realize is there day in and day out. It's just, it made sense to do, and we're proud of what we've accomplished.
So it helps. I mean, you're lowering up the startup costs by offering multiple brands potentially, but again, it's, you're walking in, everything's separate, but they could be under the same lease. It's just, you've subdivided it. And the benefits there, instead of buying a $20,000 freezer per location, you spend $25,000 and you share it, right? There's bathrooms.
But you get the simplicity of shared bathrooms. You get it shared prep kitchen. So your one prep guy is prepping for both brands at the same time. The economics of scale across the board for everything, insurance, everything else comes down because you have everything underneath that one roof and you're able to share resources.
Now that you have one or two brands open, then it's, okay, well, I already have my lease expenses and all my fixed costs. Now, can I add revenue without adding fixed costs? And that's what these virtual brands are really cool at doing.
Yep. And again, it was something that I want our franchisees to win. And anything I can do to make them more money is something that we're always going to tackle and always want to do.
And I think that's, anytime I've ever mentioned focusing on franchisees, people are like, oh, good, you're not selfish. Or, and it's like, or I'm just long-term selfish, right? I think you're long-term selfish as well. You, knowing that franchisees have to succeed for you to succeed, and you're willing to forego the profits right now in order to really put those support. And I've definitely seen it on the Dirty Dough side. One of the cool things that we did right when we entered the Craveworthy platform is our delivery fees, which make up 20 to 30% of all of our sales, they went down by 28% by doing nothing else other than saying we're a Craveworthy brand. So now you take, you know, 30% of your sales and you're like, wait, my cost just went down by 28% on 30% of my sales. Walk me through how come Craveworthy was able to do that? How did Dirty Dough participate? And are there any other examples of these economies of scale that franchisees are going to benefit from?
So everything we do is that way. So Craveworthy negotiates all of our contracts based on the platform, not the individual brands. So we take the buying power of all of our brands and put it together as one. And when you've been doing this and in this industry for as long as I have, unfortunately, you have relationships with everybody. And so you're able to get some incredible deals because of it. And we use those deals to help our franchisees and ourselves become more profitable. And that's all we really do. And you can look at what we did with Dirty Dough and the cost of the puck and getting the puck cost down, because we used our relationships to get into DOT, to get shipping simplified and everything else. So our franchisees' total food cost continues to drop. We, without having the platform that we have to be able to offer those things, we'd be in those higher ranges. But because you can take our 15 brands, our seven that are franchising today, and roll this out, you're instantly able to have this huge cost savings for everybody.
I want to hit on that DOT Foods one and explain a little bit more, because again, pros and cons versus small brands versus big brands. The pro for Dirty Dough is the wide open space, new and emerging, we're exciting, but you get me, right? And I had the bright idea of, well, we're going to own the facility and the trucks and try to ship from Utah a half a truck out to Pennsylvania, then to Florida, then to California. I think within the first week of you coming on as CEO of Dirty Dough, it was, we're not doing that anymore. We're selling the equipment, we're outsourcing it, we're going to DOT Foods. And what did that do? Before me, without the experience, you know, it's, I want weekly rotating flavors. So here's 50 to 60 different cookie pucks that I have to be managing and making sure we're selling just right. Where you came in with your expertise and said, okay, well, you still have the advantages that you had with Dirty Dough, small brand, wide open space, all of that. But I'm going to simplify everything. We're going to do 13 cookie pucks with 10 flavor profiles. We still get more flavor offerings than we currently did. But now there's actually zero waste, right? These cookies last 18 months, third-party tested, no preservatives. Like, everybody's going through the cookies in a few months. That was one of the big things that I just didn't know. You know, I was completely missing that. I didn't have the experience. Anyways, I just wanted to draw out that example of, you know, again, pros and cons of both big brand and large brand.
And I mean, so again, what Craveworthy allows us to do is operate as a big brand, even though we have small individual brands. So we're operating like we're a 300 to 700 unit gorilla already, even though some brands only have 30 restaurants, or in some cases we bought one that has two restaurants that we'll start franchising, but we're able to operate like we're so much bigger because of that. And those are the cost cuttings and the experience that we have. And being part of the Craveworthy family, it doesn't really matter which brand you're a part of. It's a matter that you're a part of this family, and that as a family, we want every brand to succeed. And the negotiation that we do for chicken, our contract that we negotiate for chicken hits 5 different brands today, you know, that are franchising. We negotiate all that chicken price for everybody at one time so we can get that best price. And same thing that we did with Dirty Dough or Sysco and Dodd and everything else. We're constantly looking at ways to lower our costs and be a big boy in the industry, even though our brands may not be that large yet.
Yes, love it. I want to talk marketing a little bit. Rewinding first to Jimmy John's and Freaky Fast, and then we'll relate it to what we're doing, you know, marketing in these brands today. But can you give us the insider scoop on the Freaky Fast, which has been one of the greatest marketing efforts in forever, I think.
I mean, when that came out and we hit that with Jimmy John's, it was all in on what we were going to be, which was going to be a delivered sandwich fast. And we always talked about being fast and speed of service and all that. But when we went all in and put all our advertising dollars on one simple message, it was, well, you're going to get your food freaky fast. It doesn't sound like a rocket science or anything, but it was a culture build that we have to hang our hat on. And so we built the entire brand and the entire culture around freaky fast. Freaky fast delivery, get your sandwich before you even finish paying at the register in under 15 seconds. Everything we did was based on that mantra, the same way that we do with every other brand now that I'm a part of. We find that one thing that we think that brand is so important and so different, and that's the one that we go to march for, you know. And Dirty Dough is stuffed cookies, and Bud Long is hand-breaded southern chicken. You know, I mean, each one of these have a mantra that we're going to live and die from. And that's also the service style. When you walk into a Bud Long service wise, you get a little bit of a southern feel to it. You get that southern hospitality, that southern food and the southern hospitality. When you walk into Wing It On, we're brash. We're, you know, the new kid on the block that has the best wing sauce. That's won 3 times now, best wing sauce in America. We like to play with that. So we're a little cocky, a little, you know, pushy on that, because no offense to Wingstop or some of my competitors, the food does not live up to what that product is at Wing It On. So we call them out for it. I mean, we put a crown on our head. Our new logo put a crown on for being the best. That's how cocky we were with what we do. And those are the things that are necessary to make the brand fun and get traction. And we took great pride in always wanting to be better than our competition. And that's still the chip on my shoulder today with everything that I do. I want to be the best of the best. And I want my brands to be better than the competition that they have. We know that we may not be able to create the number one brand and ever catch Wingstop, for example, but shit as hell, and pardon my language, but we can be the number two brand. You know, we can have the number two best number of stores open and kill them on AUVs and kill them on service and be the cult product. But we don't have to be number one in locations to win.
Historically speaking, whoever's number one is not, doesn't maintain that spot, because number two has such a competitive advantage of looking at the pros and the cons of that number one. So completely agree there. On the marketing standpoint, we saw a big change in where we spent our marketing dollars for Dirty Dough within a week of you coming on. And it was geared towards third-party ads. So we don't have to go there, but just generally speaking, what is Craveworthy doing on a localized basis to help franchisees market?
So we target way better than what most people, especially startups, ever do, because we know and we have the capacity and the knowledge from years in the industry how to pinpoint. So we even advertise to grocery store customers, which sounds absolutely stupid. Why would you go after a person that goes grocery shopping? Why would you want them? Well, everyone buys groceries.
Okay.
So we went after the grocery store business, and we went ahead and drove that those customers to us and reminded them we were there. So that allowed us to get a much bigger net than going to just, for example, and winging on, oh, let's go find the competitors that go to the sports bars or pizza and or those type of things. We go in and get it right away to everybody. Our marketing spend and our marketing knowledge of how to attract and pinpoint to your individual location is, again, something that the biggest brands do, Yum and Inspire, and those are the only ones that have that ability. We also have that ability.
I've seen, to give a little history on that, within a month, we decreased our monthly ad spend by our total spend by 50%. What we did is we reallocated away from Meta, Facebook, Google, where they charge you per impression. And under Craveworthy and Greg, we allocated, again, about 50% of the budget to these third-party platforms. And they're setting their minimums and their maximums and their bid prices. And you only get charged for a checkout. It was a great decision. So even though we decreased our total ad spend by about 50%, we saw a pretty quick 20, sometimes even 30% bump in stores just by that one strategy. Costs less. Got a lot more bang for our buck, I guess. Okay, so we'll go with two more. Community and purpose. The question I have, why is purpose-driven business such a focus for Craveworthy and how does it resonate with franchisees and their communities? And what I'm looking for is that emotional side of why people are buying food to be able to donate cookies or wings to whatever, being part of the community, soccer games, whatever. And then we'll end off with Craveworthy's vision. Perfect. And how does that relate to franchisees? So, okay, Dirty Dough is the first thing that I've done in food, and food's hard, but the rewarding and the community aspect has been amazing. We've never turned down anybody asking us to donate cookies to a nonprofit, right? You get all the brand awareness by donating 100 cookies. Just getting involved in that community, I was able to sponsor my high school football team through Dirty Dough, and I've loved that aspect about food. But talk to me about purpose-driven business as a focus for Craveworthy and how does that resonate with franchisees and their communities?
So when you buy a restaurant or when you operate a restaurant, you have to be part of the community. And so part of our marketing strategy is to become the biggest, how do you say it with the nicest way to put it? You want to be the biggest community involver for everything and anything. You want this to be the place where kids come in and want to go and say, hey, mom, can we go to Dirty Dough tonight? Because they gave me a coupon for reading a book or stuff like that. You want to be so involved in the community that every time people ask, you're the first thing that they want to give back to you because you're helping their stuff that is important to them become better and achieve the goals that they need. And then kids are always the most important. You know, when you can give back to kid organizations and sports and everything else, parents reward the places that help you, that help them and help their kids. They'll reward you by coming to your restaurant because you care and that you visit more and more. So anything you can do from autism groups to charities to everything else, you build your restaurant and your future by how involved you are in that guerrilla marketing capacity. I have done so many different things in my past where I've given away way more because it means so much to me, where I've given away cars or I've offered a chance to win $1 million at a basketball game and stuff like that, just because I want to be a part of the community. I want people to be excited to be see that we are part of their neighborhood and taking care of every aspect. We help pick up trash. We go to community church events. We, you know, give toy drives and stuff like that in our restaurants because we care and we want to be a part of it. And when you do it and it's real and you're not just doing it because that's not who you are, but you're doing it for business, people know when it's fake. But when you're doing it because it's really who you are and the organization and the culture you're part of, you get rewarded for it. And every bone in my body is about making sure that we take care of the community that we're in. We're very, very lucky in what we get to do and making sure that we give back to those people that spend a little bit of money to us is very important to us.
I think everybody resonates with that, right? We want to give back, but we have a 9-to-5 job. How am I supposed to sponsor the soccer game, right? What am I going to do? Go ask the boss if he wants to throw up a few $100. So you need to be your own boss. And then it's, well, how the hell do I be my own boss? How do I start a business and a product and marketing? And that's where franchising comes in. Here's a playbook that's worked for dozens, hundreds, thousands of people. And it allows you to take that first step into being your boss. But on that same front, like, why would somebody get a food franchise over any other type of franchise, a wellness or a service-based franchise?
I mean, I think no matter what franchise you're looking at, being a franchisee is something that allows you to have a structure and a system in place that you get to follow to try to make your own success. Owning any franchise doesn't mean you're going to be successful. It comes down to partnering with the right group and partnering with people that want to believe in you and help you achieve where you want to go. So I don't know if a restaurant is better than a service or anything else. It's the groups that you partner with. And will the group believe in helping you and making sure you're the focal point of what they do day in and day out? And are they tied in to know what has to happen to make you successful? So if you're going to pick any group, whatever it is, make sure you find a group that you feel like you're at home and that the people that you're going to do business with day in and day out truly care about you and where you're going to go and how your investment's going to play out. There's no silver bullet. There's not 100% guarantee in any business that you start. So find something that you're passionate about, find something that you're excited to do, and find something in a team that's going to help you achieve your American dream and help make that easier for you.
Like the focus, it's not the what's the concept, what's the brand, what are the numbers on the item 19, but it's the team, because that's who you're working with. And then me,
you have to believe in the people. Yeah, you have to believe in the people that you're going to battle with, and you have to believe that the people you go to battle with are going to be there for you day in and day out. And I know that sounds extremely cheesy, but business is battle, and you've got to believe that the people are all fighting for the same thing that you are. And that's to make sure that you win and make sure that you can get to the next level so you can open up store 2, 3, 4, and 5. That should always be anyone's goal when they're doing it, is how do you get to the next level?
Yeah. And you've talked a lot about that. Well, maybe I'll give you a minute to talk about that as well. But you're a very big proponent on building, using franchising to build generational wealth rather than just, you know, buying a job. And you do that by, let's start with the franchise or a few, but let's grow it from there, according to metrics and profitability and, you know, if we're getting along. But why is that important to you? And yeah, just, it's very unique.
Because, I mean, I was raised by somebody that was never home that I never got to see because he was building his dream and building his company. And it allowed me to do more in my life because he gave back and gave myself an opportunity that no one in his family ever had. And I think that's what every parent wants to do, is to change their lives or their next generation. And to do that, you have to go and take gambles, you know, and the easiest and safest gamble is buying a franchise compared to other things or starting your own business. It's definitely franchising, you know, because there's a proven track record in the people that you're investing in and the brands that you're a part of. And I just think it's such a unique opportunity that you're given to help get people to that next level. It's so cool when I run into old Jimmy John's franchisees that now have 30 or 40 restaurants when I sold them their first. And, you know, they're talking about how they took their family for a month to Europe and all these other things because they were so successful. And that's what I would love. That's why I do it. That's why this is so exciting to me, is that I love seeing people that continue to improve their lives because of things that we're doing.
Yeah. And I think you can hear that and you're like, that's cool. They have 30 stores. But like, what does that really mean? I started with one store, small investment, and over 10 years, 5 years, 30 years, it doesn't matter. I got up to 30 stores. Well, I think Jimmy John's are making a few hundred grand on average, right? Or let's even call it 100 grand. Well, now you're making 3 million every year. Yeah. Unless you're dumb. And if you know how to protect your wealth, at least a little bit, save up half of that for a few years, put a nest egg of $5 million. If you can get a 7% return, take out 5% a year. So now you're counting for inflation. And now you're living off of $250,000 with a $5 million nest egg protecting you against inflation. They're going to hand off to your kids that they also get to make $250,000 every single year.
Plus, and I think that if your business is still good, you have an asset you can sell. So if you continue to do it, and I joke all the time that people who got in early with Taco Bell all are flying planes all over the world because they were so successful because they got in at the right time. People who got in early with Jimmy John's are extremely wealthy. People who get in early with a brand, yeah, there may be some failures, but if you get in early and are able to build your own dynasty and your own destiny because you have open territories and everything else, you can create your own form of generational wealth that's going to be enormous in respect from your original investment. And again, I preface this by there's always risk and you may fail, but the odds that you can be successful are in your hands if you have open territories and if you know you got to put in the work. Nothing we do does not require a lot of hard work, though. And this business is all about putting in the hours, putting in the work and growing. And then, yes, once you get to a certain point, you can have someone else doing the work for you and you can go ahead and just manage that person. But at the beginning, it is work. And that's why this is, you know, the investment that people sometimes don't choose, because the restaurant business is hard, but it's also so rewarding. And we can talk about how you reward by the number of people's lives that you touch and stuff like that. And you can look at any of the things that I talk about when I'm out and about. I love the fact that I get to change people's lives that work for me every day. And I get Christmas cards for employees that I gave them their first job and they tutored my son and stuff like that. And it's been 20 years. I mean, my son's 21 years old and I get a card from this individual every year. And she hasn't worked for me in 15 years. Giving me an update on where her family is and all that, and thankful that I taught her how to do certain things. This industry changes so many lives.
Yeah, and I've seen, I mean, the mentorship that you provide to employees, but also franchisees has been awesome. I thought you were crazy the first time you got on a call with 100 Dirty Dough franchisees, and then you said, "Okay, I'm open for questions, and I'll stay on as long as you have questions for." And you did that on every call. I'm like, this guy's insane. But you have provided yourself to be there and answer those questions. I think this is a good time to pivot into what is the long-term growth strategy of Craveworthy, and how are the franchisees involved in that?
So, I mean, I set a goal to be the next Rourke Investments. I want to be the largest restaurant company in America by the time we're done. And I say that as an extremely lofty goal. And my team laughs at me a lot when I say it. But the reason for it is that you have to dream so big to achieve any dream. And if you don't dream that way, you're not going to be able to achieve the little dreams along the way. You've got to set this lofty goal. And to achieve where we want to go, our franchisees are extremely important and actually are the backbone of everywhere we want to go. And without great franchisees buying multiple stores and growing with us, we could never achieve what we need to do to achieve my dream, which is be the largest restaurant company in America. And that sounds so weird to say, but I truly believe that's what we're building. And I may not be alive when that finally happens, but we're going to set everything in place to make that where we go on a continual basis. And our franchisees are going to continue to open with us. And when we take a new brand and have a potential of opening, oh, you came in for Dirty Dough, but now I just started this other brand, you get that opportunity before anyone else. So you constantly are going to be able to get to grow in the same family, knowing how we operate to help us achieve where we want to go. And I'm very, very humble in the fact that I know I can't do that without the franchisees that we allow into our system. So when we pick our franchisees, we are hard on who we choose. And we're not going to just let everybody in. We're going to choose the best of the best. And if you're chosen by us to be part of our group, we know that you're going to do the things necessary to help us achieve where we want to go, because that's our goal. And we need the best to do so.
I want to reiterate that point. I was just in Dallas this last weekend representing Craveworthy. And anytime Dirty Dough came up, it was like, oh crap, we already have six stores opening. We're kind of full in this area. But then that kind of transitioned to, okay, I'm the Dirty Dough owner in Dallas and I filled it up. Now what do I do? Do I go outside of my market? That's typically your only option, right? But with Craveworthy, it's no, I'm going to stick in my market and I'm going to add on Genghis or any of these other newer brands. And man, it seems like you're acquiring a few brands a year. So there's always more options to add. And it's also a good variety of different brands.
We want our franchisees to stay in one DMA. So you can have the economy of scale necessary so you can actually be successful. If you have to go ahead and build two overhead structures because you bought two different brands and you have to spread them out between, let's say, DFW, and then you go to Nashville, and then I got to go to Colorado to get the store count that I want. That means you have to build three different teams. With our vision and the way we're doing this, we want you to stay in that one DMA and build one team where you can have the cost savings that we have by having that platform and drive results to the bottom line. That's really what we're trying to do.
And there's the option to be actively coached in doing that. And you have so many different brands. The other thing that I'm thinking of too, if I were to buy a Little Caesars and a Wingstop, put them in the same city, well, they have different point of sale systems. They have different reporting. They have different teams. They have different training. I have to figure out everything again. Where I'm like, okay, I know Greg. I know the team. It's worked well with Wing It On. Now let's move to a Tsum Tsum or something like that. Which has been
the other thing that makes the other thing that makes it so different than all the other franchises out there is I don't put non-competes in your agreement. I am a restaurant guy. I'm a business person. I'm not going to put some bologna non-compete that allows you not to own another chicken brand. I want the best of the best. And if that means that, hey, later and done, you built out your Wing It Ons and something else comes over and you're going to have Wing It On and something outside of Graveworthy, I want you to be able to go and do that. I want you to be successful. I hope you go and say, hey, let's take a Wing It On and a Bud Long. But I also understand this is a business model and I need to make sure my partners win. There's not another franchisor out there that ever thinks that way. And that's, again, because we want to do this the right way and do it with partners.
I opened up a Wing It On. It's for whatever reason, there's another opportunity and any other brand is just, sorry, wait your 10 years, you know, wait for the agreement to expire, whatever. And yours is more money where my mouth is, like, and there's no non-compete to prove it. So absolutely love that. Greg, I appreciate everything that you shared with us. Any last thoughts on Craveworthy or to potential franchisees that you'd like to share?
I mean, the only thing I ever say and every time that I do any of these is that we truly want to be your partner. And I know everybody says that, but there is nobody in this industry like the team that we've assembled that truly gets what you go through every day. And we put our money where our mouth is day in and day out. We want the best operators. We want the best people. And you don't need to have restaurant experience to grow with us. We handle that. We train you. We teach you. And then we support you through the process. So regardless of what decision you end up making, even if you have a question about another brand or you decide Craveworthy isn't for you, you're more than welcome to send me an email or ask a question about anything. And I'll always help because I think this is one of the greatest industries out there.
Yep. And again, everything that you say, I have an experience. That's how I met you. A potential investment a year and a half, 2 years ago. And you just gave me everything I was doing good and everything you were doing, I was doing bad on an hour call. First time we ever met. I'm like, what's in it for you? You already told me that we weren't ready for you yet. But you willingly gave that time and then you jumped on as an advisor. So there's my testimony behind that. But Greg, I appreciate it. Craveworthy Brands, best place for anybody to go to get more information on the franchise options right now. And then connecting with you, is LinkedIn the best?
For sure. Just jump on Greg Majewski on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, everything else. But you're more than welcome to find me any which way you need to.
Okay. Thank you.